This is Solidarity Journal. Share in a common voice. Just might find your own.
To think that this was John Doe.
It's like the arguments about the arguments in
part. It's Tuesday, February 28th, and you're listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. On today's show, I'll talk about Camilo Mejia, an Iraq war veteran who will be coming to Peoria this upcoming Saturday to speak about his time in Iraq and the U.S. military and what led him to refuse to fight and become a conscious objector. So stay tuned to Solidarity Journal on the front lines of radio resistance. Listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo.
I first went to the war because I was afraid, because politically, much like anyone here would disagree with any war politically, I disagree with the war. I disagree with the reasons that the government had given for the invasion. I didn't think that we had made a case. As a government, I mean, that the government had made a case for weapons of mass destruction or links between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. So politically, I was very much in disagreement with the war, but I didn't want to really make a stand because I was terrified, because I didn't want to go through a court-martial, because I didn't want to go to jail, because I was a squad leader in an infantry unit, and I didn't want my friends to think I was a coward or a traitor. Also because there was no war at the time. We were deployed to the Middle East in early March of 2003. And part of me, I guess, was hoping that there wouldn't really be a war, which would just be like a huge show of force to scare Saddam out of power. It was very naive of me. But we went, and then there was war. And then as an infantryman and as an infantry squad leader, you know, we engaged in combat and we did raids and we did security escorts.
And so we speaking is Camilo Mejia, who will be coming to Peoria and speaking Saturday on March 3rd. At 2 p.m. at the new Miller Hall on Bradley University's campus. If you're unfamiliar with Mejia, he was an Iraq war veteran with the 124th Infantry, a staff sergeant, who, after being stationed in Iraq, became one of the first GIs to publicly refuse to fight in the Iraq War. He went further and filed for conscious objector status after understanding the line between military duty and moral obligations. Mejia originally grew up in Nicaragua and Costa Rica before moving to the United States in 1994. He joined the military at age 19. He was in the Army for 3 years before transferring to Florida National Guard, where he was stationed in Iraq for 5 months, then returned for a two-week leave to the U.S., after which he did not return for duty. The reason why he refused to return to Iraq was that he felt that he was partaking in war crimes, like torture and abuse of detainees, and that he felt it was criminal. It was a war of aggression and a war of imperial domination. A report that was taken in 2007 said that since 2002, over 505 service members have applied for conscious objector CO status. 179 of those requests have been granted. In that same time period, approximately 20,000 service members who have gone AWOL, absent without official leave, have been classified as deserters. Mejia talks about why he came to the military, and why he eventually refused to fight anymore in Iraq, and what he was feeling at the time. In the documentary, Soldier of Conscience, Mejia talks about the reality of war, and how each violent and traumatizing moment left him with no recollection but this blank space in his memory.
I went to Iraq thinking that I could push my principles aside and then get the war over with, put it behind me, move on. But nothing ever prepares you for the reality of war. A lot of the things that happened in Iraq, like when people ask me if I killed anybody, there's a lot of confusion because, you see, war is not as clear-cut as they portray it in the movies. But there was this one time we're positioned on this rooftop. It was like a political protest that turned violent. Everyone is quiet. And this young man emerges. And he's got something in his hand. And I know that it's a grenade. And, but I also know that he can't do anything to us because he's too far. Everything that I'm describing to you, I'm looking through the rear aperture of my M16 sight. So it's very, very, very intense moment. And I don't remember squeezing the trigger, and I don't remember seeing him go down. All I remember is that we shot at him, and that the next image that I have is, you know, two men came from the crowd and grabbed him by the shoulders and pulled him through a puddle of blood. And then I remember that after that mission was over, you know, before we moved on to our next mission, you know, I went into a dark room by myself and I pulled out my magazine and I counted the bullets and I realized that I had fired 11 bullets at him. And it changes you.
Through an extensive manual count, the Bureau of Investigative Journalism can reveal that 681, more than 80% of those killed in checkpoint stops, were civilians. 50 families were shot, and at least 30 children reported killed. Mejia recounts another time he had the same experience when doing a checkpoint stop, and what happened to a child and his father.
Child was basically riding in the passenger seat with his father, and we decapitated his father with a machine gun. And when we went down to the low ground to search for enemy wounded, I remember seeing this young person standing next to this body that was decapitated. And when I think about it, I cannot remember the expression on the child's face. I cannot remember that it was a child. I only know this because people told me later on that was the man's son, the man's young son, who was standing next to the body.
The level of destruction left Mejia with PTSD, something he began to feel and understand in regards to the moral contract with himself.
So when you deal with this type of situation, you're not really dealing with the fear of being killed by a bomb on the road. You're not responding to a fear of going out there and being shot or being killed by a grenade thrown by a child. You're not dealing with the fear of the environment and how the environment's going to turn against you. This is a different type of injury. This is an injury that you inflicted upon yourself. This is the result of a violation of that internal contract that says you should not kill another human being. And I don't think that we understand this when we talk about PTSD treatment. What are some of the events that took place in Iraq that bother you the most? And I shared this incident with him. And he told me basically what any psychologist would say: you're being too hard on yourself, you know, this was a justified kill, you were in a war situation, you were in a combat situation, he threw a grenade, the grenade exploded, you were given the order, he would have killed people someplace else.
This was dehumanizing the Iraqi people, because Mejia felt it was a way to protect oneself from the violent memories of a soldier killing or abusing others.
To dehumanize the enemy by means of your military background or training or the indoctrination or the heat and the fatigue and the intensity of the environment. But there are times when it is so hard to deal with these experiences that I suppose your own body, your own psyche, in order to protect you from these memories and in order to protect you from losing your humanity, erases certain memories that are too painful to deal with, that are too overwhelming to deal with. And whether it is to punish the man in your squad or the man in your unit, or to erase the face of a child whose father was decapitated next to him in a car at a traffic control point, or whether it is to pose next to a dead civilian, or Iraqi or whoever, it is necessary to become dehumanized, because war is dehumanizing.
Mejia continues with the destruction of Iraq and how it led to him to start listening to his conscience.
Nothing ever prepares you for going to Iraq and seeing the destruction of an entire nation. Nothing ever prepares you for, you know, the unmeasured killing of civilians. Nothing ever prepares you for what that does to you as a human being, you know, to kill an innocent person. Nothing's going to really prepare you for the level of destruction that you bring upon a nation and that you bring upon yourself for being a part of it. And yet, I have a conscience, you know, which goes way beyond any law. It goes way beyond any order that I could receive.
This led Mejia going absent without leave and going underground.
So I decided to resist and to go underground and put together a civilian legal defense to bring my case to a military court. I decided to apply for conscientious objection. And 5 months later, I resurfaced and I gave a press conference in which I denounced the war as oil-driven and immoral. And it received a lot of attention because at the time I was the only combat veteran to be really outspoken about what's happening in Iraq, and, you know, to be real critical not only of the war in Iraq but the policy, the government, my own unit. And so because of that attention and because of my statements, which were really political, the entire case became politicized, you know. So when I had my court-martial 2 months later, it was mostly a political court-martial because the question had been asked to the military as to whether you're going to allow conscientious objectors to come back from Iraq and denounce the war and be critical of the military and the government. Are you going to open that door for conscientious objectors to do the same, or are you going to incarcerate this person and make an example out of him? And the military decided to make an example out of me, so they put me in jail.
Mejia talks more in detail about becoming a conscious objector and the fears that overwhelmed him in making this decision.
But then I came home on a two-week leave, and removed from that dangerous situation, removed from that pressure, I started thinking about the war, looking for answers. And something changed my life. I began to object in a more profound, personal, spiritual way to war. And so I made a commitment that I was a conscientious objector and that I wasn't going back. And it wasn't a decision that took place overnight, you know. It was a painful process because it's healing, but it's, it could destroy you. There's all this fear, this regret, there's this the issue of camaraderie and, you know, your body's in war. And also the fear of punishment and all this guilt and being tried by a court-martial, and just the words court-martial, you know, it's like so evil and so bad. All these horrible images, you know, come to you, and like, you know, being a coward and being a traitor and you know, losing your freedom and ending up in a jail. And then suddenly, you know, I say, you know, I'm not going to go to war. I'm not going to go back to that. I'm not going to go back to obey everything that I'm told, keeping my mouth shut and ignoring the fact that I have a conscience. I'm going to take a stand, and I'm going to say, no, I'm not going back to this war. And it just exploded because I was the first combat veteran to come back from Iraq and go public and say, this is wrong.
I did not prepare a statement because what I have to say from the heart. And it's a very simple message, and it simply is that I am saying no to war. I went to Iraq and I was an instrument of violence, and now I have decided to become an instrument of peace. I have decided I'm not going to be a part of the war, but I'm going back to the military today. I have really no idea what's going to happen, but whatever happens, if they try to say that I'm a criminal and they give me many years in jail, at least I know that I made the right decision and that God has forgiven me already.
And everything that I feared happened. I was called a coward. I was called a traitor. I was accused of desertion. I was tried. I was convicted. I was sentenced. I was put in jail. And let me tell you, I've never felt freer in my life, you know. There's no higher assertion of your freedom than to follow your conscience.
How do they expect a man to do the things that I have, come back and be the same? Things are done that I regret, things you've seen I won't forget. It's not so many more. And I'm trying to find my way home. Child inside me, long dead and gone. Somewhere between, lost and alone. Trying to find my way home. I seen another side, another slice of the pie. Didn't seem too fair to me. People who did not deserve the suffering they were. You know, freedom ought to be free. Trying to find my way home. Child inside me, long dead and gone. Somewhere between, lost and alone. Trying to find my way home. And whether we lose or win, I'm so sick and tired of the spin. I don't think I can take any more. The truth will stay in disguise, hidden beneath all the lies. What are we fighting for? And I'm trying to find my way home. The child inside me is long dead and gone. Somewhere between, lost and alone. I'm trying to find my way home. Trying hard to keep a smile, looking through the eyes of my child. Tell him my dad has to go. And after daddy's went away, he's come back and he ain't the same as the man that you used to know. And I'm trying to find my way home.
Well, that does it for today's show. Make sure to tune in to WAZU 90.7 FM every Tuesday to hear Solidarity Journal at 6 a.m. and 2 p.m. And if you want to hear past shows, make sure to look up radioforall.net and search for Solidarity Journal. For more information on this show and other WAZU shows programming, check out our website at wazufm.org. So until next time, keep up the resistance.
Lately it's occurred to me it's hard to fight an enemy that lives inside of your head. Spend my life in between the sleepless nights and the bad dreams.